morning, brothers and sisters. Greetings in the name of Jesus. And maybe the testimony time is a little quiet because you're thinking about in a few days, to give a testimony as well. Many times in life, I'm one of those that needs a lot of motivation to try and accomplish things or to do the right things or make decisions. And many of us know what it's like to help motivate children. Some of you school teachers know what it's like to motivate children. Many of us parents, and maybe even the grandparents, need motivated by times. And motivation comes in different forms. Sometimes it's an incentive that's held out. Sometimes it's more of a command. This is going to happen, and you will do this. And you can fill in the blank. There's probably many other ways. I ran across this. It's not a story. I think it's made up, but it drives home a point. And I would like to read this little thing before we go into the message, because it starts out once upon a time. Once upon a time, a daughter complained to her father that her life was miserable and that she didn't know how she was going to make it. She was tired of fighting and struggling all the time. It seemed just as one problem was solved, another soon followed. Her father, a chef, took her to the kitchen. He filled 3 pots with water and placed each on high fire. Once the 3 pots began to boil, he placed potatoes in the 1 pot, eggs in the 2nd pot, and ground coffee beans in the 3rd pot. He then let them sit and boil without saying a word to his daughter. The daughter moaned and impatiently waited, wondering what he was doing. After 20 minutes, he turned off the burners. He took the potatoes out of the pot and placed them in a bowl. He pulled the eggs out and placed them in a bowl. He then ladled the coffee out and placed it in a cup. Turning to her, he asked, "Daughter, what do you see?" "Potatoes, eggs, and coffee," she hastily replied. "Look closer," he said, "and touch the potatoes." She did and noted that they were soft. He then asked her to take an egg and break it. After pulling off the shell, she observed the hard-boiled egg. Finally, he asked her to sip the coffee. Its rich aroma brought a smile to her face. "Father, what does this mean?" she asked. He then explained that the potatoes, the eggs, and coffee beans had each faced the same adversity, the boiling water. However, each one reacted differently. The potatoes went in strong, hard, and unrelenting, but in boiling water, it became soft and weak. The egg was fragile, with the thin outer shell protecting its liquid interior until it was put into the boiling water. Then inside, the egg became hard. However, the ground coffee beans were unique. After they were exposed to the boiling water, they changed the water and created something new. "Which are you?" he asked his daughter. "When adversity knocks on your door, how do you respond? Are you a potato, an egg, or a coffee bean?" The moral is, in life, things happen all around us. Things happen to us, but the only thing that truly matters is what happens within us. This morning, we're going to look at a Bible character, and we're going to be reading a lot of scripture, and I would like to look at motivations from this character. And there's going to be a motivation here for every one of you, I think. There's only 5 of them, but you can probably find a small bit of motivation from one of these 5 things that you could connect to something in your life. And the egg, the potato, and the coffee face the same adversity. And now, while we don't all face the same adversity, we all face some type of adversity or need some type of motivation. But it's what you do, what happened with that adversity, what you do with that adversity, or those things in your life, that is going to motivate you to do something, whether it's right or wrong. But I like to think about positive motivations here. So we're going to look at motivations from David, and you may turn with me a while to 1 Samuel 16. We are not going to notice near everything, as I sat down and read quite a bit, I don't know if there's more in the Bible about David than most other Bible characters or not, but we all know that David did some very wrong things and had sin in his life. And we're not going to be looking at those. And those can be motivating factors in themselves. We're choosing this morning to look at five different areas in David's life. And we're going to take the natural progression of Scripture. So number one is obedient youth. We're going to notice that David was willing to serve God after... Okay, so notice that we see, or the first time we see David in the Bible, is not until he was called in off the field. He was tending sheep. And so, well, I want to notice David's willingness to serve God, be an obedient youth, after God had called him to rule the nation. To rule a nation that a man was unfaithful in his duty. He was an humble servant, but he was in reality a king. So in 1 Samuel 16, we're going to be skipping through, assuming you know most all the context. But we're going to read verse 5. This is Samuel. When Jesse asked him why he came, and he said, "Peaceably, I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. David was not present. David was, okay, I know he has not been called yet at this point, but David was serving in the menial tasks while his other seven brothers were part of this special event. The prophet came and called them together. If you were to look, Samuel took a heifer with him when he went to this to meet Jesse. So this is a special meeting, but David was obediently serving. He maybe didn't even know about it. We don't know that, I guess. Now I'd like to read verses 18 to 23 of the same chapter. "Then answered one of the servants and said, 'Behold, I've seen a son of Jesse, Bethlehemite.'" Maybe I should have just brought in the context in between. In between these verses, Samuel went through all the sons and said, "Well, is this all you have, Jesse?" And Jesse's like, "No, there's one out back tending sheep." "Well, you got to go call him." And so then he anointed David. Now, this is after that anointing, sometime after. "Then answered one of the servants, one of Saul's servants, and said, 'Behold, I have seen the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is cunning in playing, and a mighty valiant man, and a man of war, and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Lord is with him. Wherefore Saul sent messengers unto Jesse, and said, 'Send me David, thy son, which is with the sheep.' And Jesse took an ass laden with bread, and a bottle of wine, and a kid, and sent them by David his son unto Saul. And David came to Saul and stood before him, and he loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, 'Let David, I pray thee, stand before me, for he hath found favor in my sight.' And it came to pass, when the evil spirit from God was upon Saul, that David took an harp and played with his hand, and Saul was refreshed and was well, and the evil spirit departed from him." I know we know this, and I knew this fact, but it just kind of boggled my mind as I thought about the fact that David willingly went to this man, Saul, who he already knew. Saul didn't know this, I don't believe, but David already knew that he was anointed to take Saul's place. And it says he admired him. He came to, verse 21, he loved him greatly, became his armor bearer. The very man that the Spirit of God had been yanked from because of his choices, the Spirit of God had departed from him because God stepped away from his life. But he was serving the man who had lost God's presence in his life, and he willingly did this. He was an obedient youth. Now, jumping into chapter 17, we're just going to notice verses 17 and 18. We know about the battle that was going on between the Philistines and Israel, and I don't think David knew about the giant yet, but the giant was part of this story. Verses 17 and 18. "And Jesse said unto David his son, 'Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare and take their pledge. Do you see the list of what's going on here? And again, we're pulling out different snatches of David's willingness to serve, and he was obedient. Jesse said, now, David, I need you to go check on your brothers. Take this ephah of parched corn. I don't know exactly what an ephah of parched corn is, but the little bit I could figure out was that this was approximately 5 gallons in volume. Now, 5 gallons of shelled corn, I don't know. Parched corn, was it more flour? I don't know that. But just get the list. Doesn't say that he saddled a donkey either. 5 gallons of flour or corn of some sort, 10 loaves and 10 cheeses. And he was told to carry them to these people, to his brethren and to the leader, the captain. And that was probably about 15 miles. And I don't know, I guess David probably really whined about it. We don't have that anywhere. I know he wasn't a perfect son, but I like to notice here he was obedient. We don't know that we don't have that he whined about it. We have no indication prior to this or up to this point. He was an obedient young man, stepped in there. He couldn't serve his country. In fact, when he got there, and we're not going to read that part, his oldest brother was upset at him for coming. He said, why'd you leave those sheep just because you're coming to be nosy? He was treated very unfairly. His adversity was he was treated unfairly. That was his adversity in this story. Now his main objective when he got there and saw what was going on was to answer the call that was within him. He was called by his dad to go and talk to his brothers and check on them and bring a report back, is what I gather. He said, see, take their pledge. Let's get a word from your brothers how they're doing. But the call came within him. And that call was to deal with the disrespect that this giant had toward their nation and ultimately toward his heavenly father. And I believe this special spirit of God was in his heart as well. And my nature says, I want recognition. It's not my first desire to go and serve unnoticed, but that's what David was doing here. Up to this point, we see time and again what we've already looked at. He was serving unnoticed. And he served well. But he also was serving below his calling. He had been called to be the next king, but he was serving far below that calling. We see here he humbled himself to serve what was expected of him as a son of his dad. He was serving as a resident of the kingdom that he was living. What an amazing youth. Would you like for your story to sound like this? Youth, young people, would you like your story to sound like this? How about middle age? Would you like your story to sound like this? Or old folks? Grandfathers. Would you like your story to sound like this? Grandmothers? We all would. But I'm not one that loves to serve unnoticed. But David willingly did this. And I want that to be a motivator to me as much as to you. He was an obedient youth that was serving unnoticed and serving far below his calling. Number two, we'll see that David was respectful in the chase. Turn to chapter 18. We're going to notice the next number of verses out of 18 and 19. We're going to read verses 9 to 16 here in chapter 18. So after David had won the fight with Goliath and had taken his life, and people had praised him for what he had done, verse 9, and Saul eyed David from that day forward. And it came to pass on the morrow that the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied in the midst of the house, and David played with his hand as at other times. And there was a javelin in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the javelin, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall with it. And David avoided it out of his presence twice. And Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him and was departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from him and made him his captain over 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. And David behaved himself wisely in all the ways, and the Lord was with him. Wherefore, when Saul saw that he behaved himself very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. Now, skipping down to verse 29. And Saul was yet the more afraid of David, and Saul became David's enemy continually. And then we'll hop on over into chapter 19, verse 6. And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. Now, I know I skipped a lot through here, but we see in the first several verses I read that Saul was intensely jealous of David, and he was afraid of him. It says, we read it three times, that Saul was afraid of David. And I think he knew that David had the Spirit of God in him, and Saul did not. But he was out to get him. Except here in verse 6 that we read, that Saul listened to his son Jonathan, and he said, I'm not going to slay David. He's going to be fine. And he committed to be civil, verbally. I shouldn't say he committed. Saul verbally committed to be civil with David and treat him better. Treat him nicely. Now let's read verses 8 to 11. And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines and slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in the house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the javelin. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. And Saul sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain. And we go on to there's much more to this part of the story, but I want you to notice that David came back and served time and again. He served, javelin thrown at him twice. Saul, and he escaped, and Saul put him in a captain over 1,000, which I'm assuming was because he had hoped he would get killed that way. It did not work. David came back and played again for Saul. He still respected this very man that was acting horribly. This man was out to destroy his son-in-law. This man was out to destroy this chosen of the throne, even though I don't know if he knew that at this point. At this point already, David had men that served him. And there was nothing standing in the way of David ordering retaliation towards Saul. What was in the way? What was keeping David from ordering his men to retaliate and just take Saul out? I mean, the job was already done. He was already anointed to be king. I don't think there was anything in the way except the respect that David had for this man and his position, because God had placed him there. And he was there by God's timing, not by David's timing. It was not because he was deserving to be served with respect anymore at this point. Several more pages over, chapter 22. We'll read verses 1 and 2, chapter 22. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And every one that was in distress, and every one that was in debt, and every one that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them. And there were with him about 400 men. So you see, David was already collecting without trying. He was collecting a following because of his wise action. And because of the respect and maturity that he was showing, he was getting this larger following. Now, chapter 24, verses 1 to 8. And it came to pass, when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. And he came to the sheep cotes by the way, where was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day which the Lord has set, which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand. Thou mayest do to him as it shall seem good unto thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing unto my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul rose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward and went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, my lord, the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. We'll stop there. David had the ideal opportunity to turn the tables in his favor, and he knew it, and his men knew it, and they wanted to do it. He wouldn't need to be on the run for another day. It would have been over right there. But all he did was went up and took a piece of his garment, just cut that little piece off. And I would think that this likely really struck Saul's heart in the end as he thought about this man could have taken him out, taken his life, but he chose not to. The man that he was hunting, the hunter was now the one that was going to be, could have been his life taken. But he spared him. This hard-hearted man had to have been affected by it. And David's heart was smitten, we see, because he had touched the Lord's anointed. He had stepped across the line in his mind, and he was not, he felt in that situation he had not shown the respect. And I think we have a couple more verses about respectful in the chase. Let's get to chapter 26, and we'll read verses 8 to 17. Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore, let me smite him, I pray thee, with the spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite him a second time. And David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said, furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they gat them away, and no man saw it, nor knew it, neither waked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen upon them. Then David went over to the other side and stood on the top of a hill afar off, a great space between them. And David cried to the people and said to Abner the son of Ner, saying, answerest thou not, Abner? Then Abner answered and said, who art thou that criest to the king? And David said to Abner, art not thou a valiant man? And who is like to thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept thy lord the king? For they came one of the people in to destroy the king thy lord. This thing is not good that thou hast done. As the Lord liveth, ye are worthy to die, because ye have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is, and the cruse of water that was at his bolster. And Saul knew David's voice, and said, is this thy voice, my son David? And David said, it is my voice, my lord, O king. And he said, wherefore doth my lord pursue after his servant? For what have I done, and what evil is in mine hand? Again, we'll stop right there. But we'll turn yet to verses 21 to 25. Then said Saul, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. And David answered and said, behold, the king's spear, and let one of the young men come over and fetch it. The Lord rendered to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness, for the Lord delivered thee into mine hand today, but I would not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. And now, because as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord, and let him deliver me out of all tribulations. Then Saul said to David, blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things, and also shall still prevail. So David went on his way, and Saul returned to the palace. We know it did not work out well. David could not go back because Saul was still out to get him. But here we see more and more illustrations of how David respected Saul, not only in what he said, but in what he did. They were not living, obviously, in the New Testament time. It was not wrong to take someone's life that was doing them wrong, especially in this situation. I want you to see David's heart yet in 2 Samuel chapter 1. We'll read verses 11 and 12. This comes now after Saul and Jonathan had died. Verse 11, 12 of 2 Samuel 1, then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. Now we'll look down to verse 17, and we'll read to the end of the chapter, 17 and the 19 and the end of the chapter. And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not to Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ascalon. Lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice. Lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shields of the mighty is vilely cast away. The shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. I know we're rushing through this, but just hear these words coming from the heart of a man that's being chased. But yet, even after the man is dead, he is still giving up these words, as though he had not been the anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, the sword of Saul returned not empty. To the praise that's heaped on him. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives. And in their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished? I know we're trying to rush through a lot, but you just see the respect that David had for this man that was following him, that was chasing him down, that wanted to kill him. How could he praise the man that sought his life? I believe that David believed in his heart that he needed to lift Saul up before the eyes of the nation. He needed to help the people remember the positive impacts that their king, their slain king, had had on their nation. Well, motivation number three, I'd like to turn, we're right here, chapter 2 of 2 Samuel. I'm calling this the humble servant king, and this is, there's far too many for us to get over all of them. So we'll read verse 8 of chapter 2. But Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. Abner was a Saul loyalist, and after Saul's death, he made Ishbosheth, Saul's son, to be king. And he reigned for 2 years while David was king of Judah. And after there had been about 2 years of battle between David's men and Abner, his faithful few were getting weaker and weaker, the faithful few that were following Ishbosheth. Now turn to chapter 3, and we'll read verse 1. Now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. Now verses 12 and 13. And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, "Whose is the land?" saying also, "Make a league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring about all Israel unto thee." And he said, "Well, I will make a league with thee, but one thing I require of thee, that is, thou shalt not see my face, except thou first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when thou comest to see me." So Abner's men were getting weaker and weaker. David was getting stronger. And so Abner saw that things were not working out. He says, "I want to meet with you." And David's like, "You may, but under the condition that you bring my wife back to me." Because Saul had given Michal, years before this, had given Michal to another man. Now we'll read verses 17 and 21. And Abner had communications with the elders of Israel, saying, "Ye sought for David in times past to be king over you. Now then, do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies.' And Abner also spake in the ears of Benjamin And Abner went also to speak in the ears of David in Hebron all that seemed good to Israel and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. So Abner came to David to Hebron, and 20 men with him. And David made Abner and the men that were with him a feast. And Abner said unto David, I will arise and go, and will gather all Israel unto my lord the king, that they may make a league with thee, that thou mayest reign over all that thine heart desireth. And David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. I don't know if you remember, but this title is an humble servant king. What did David owe Abner? Abner had anointed, it doesn't say anointed, he had made Ishbosheth king to work against David. Abner and his men were getting weaker, and he cried out to David to have a meeting, and he came, and David, we have here, he made a feast for Abner and his men. He didn't owe him. He was serving. He was humbly serving where he was not required to serve. He made him this feast, and he left in peace. A mighty king was lifted up by God. This man that was lifted up by God, he wasn't required to show this kindness to Abner. After the revengeful killing of Abner, which happened later, David himself was right there in the funeral procession. If we were to look at verse 31 of this chapter, David was right there following after in the procession of the very man that was trying to defeat him in the name of Abner. Now we'll turn over to chapter 9. Noticing the servant, the humble servant that David was. 6 and 7 of chapter 9. Now when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was coming to David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, Behold thy servant. And David said unto him, Fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. And again, there's much more to this story. But again, David serving in his high level as king, but he was serving just like a lower man would have. He was giving to this man. So progressing on in David's life, number 4, I'd like to look at loving in the face of treachery. So Absalom had killed Amnon for his injustice to his sister, to Absalom's sister, and he had fled the area for 3 years. And David mourned the loss of his son Amnon, and he wished to see Absalom. If we were to read chapter 13, verse 39, it says there he desired to see Absalom. He wanted to see him. Joab wanted Absalom to go back to Jerusalem as much as anyone. And the king gave him permission and told him to go and fetch him. And Joab was David's man. And he went to fetch him. 14, verse 21. I don't want to lose all these verses, but we're going to skip over some. And the king said unto Joab, Behold, now I've done this thing. Go therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. So he said, Go fetch him, bring him. Verse 24. And the king said, Let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. So Absalom was brought back, but he did not want to see his own father. And so he went and lived for 2 more years. Now we're total of 5 years he had not seen his father. He then came before his father in verse 33. So Joab came to the king and told him, and when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. And it was after this that Absalom went on to steal the hearts of the people. And he tricked his father in verses 7 to 9 of chapter 15. Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed to the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode in Gershon and Syria, saying, If the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. And the king said to him, Go in peace. And so he went to Hebron. But it was all a lie. It was about stealing the hearts of the people. And there they blew the trumpet and proclaimed him king. And real shortly, David was fleeing again. Only this time he was fleeing from his own son that wanted to take his life and steal the throne. In the midst of this chaos, David's heart was still loving his son. He was loving in the face of treason or treachery. His own son had turned on him, but he still loved him. Notice chapter 18, verse 5. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. And all the people heard when the king gave the captain's charge concerning Absalom. David was not doing this just to be nice. Everyone heard and knew that that was his heart. And now look, and you will see his heart in verses 32 and 33 here of chapter 18. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise against thee do thee hurt. Be as this young man. You know, what he was saying is, Absalom is dead. And the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, oh, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son. He loved this young man. Well, I don't know if he was very young anymore, but he loved his own son in spite of being turned on. Now, I want to look finally. We're going to turn back to 2 Samuel chapter 7. This is not really the end of David's life, but it's the final, number 5. He surrendered his righteous desire for God's plan. Chapter 7, we're just going to read. Well, I'm not sure where we're going to read. I'm not going to read all these verses I was planning to. And it came to pass, we'll start at verse 1. When the king sat in his house, the Lord had given him rest round about from all his enemies. And the king said to Nathan the prophet, see now I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of the Lord dwelleth within curtains. And Nathan said to the king, go and do all that is in thine heart, the Lord is with thee. And it came to pass that night that the word of the Lord came unto Nathan, saying, go and tell my servant David, thus saith the Lord, shalt thou build me an house for me to dwell in? Whereas I have not dwelt in any house since the time the children of Israel came out of Egypt, even to this day, and have walked in the tent. Anyhow, we go on. We're not going to read it all. But God was just saying, David, you have a good thing in mind of building something for the tabernacle or for the ark. But it's not going to be you to do it. It's going to be your son. Your son that's going to raise up after. He's going to be the one to build me this house. And so God paused it. In verses 12 and 13, and when thy days be fulfilled, and thou shalt sleep with thy fathers, I will set up thy seed after thee, which shall proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom, and he shall build me an house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. So there was the promise. And David didn't know who it would be, because as of yet, Solomon was not born. But he was just told that his son was going to be raised up, and he would build it, and he would establish it. And from this promise, from this time on, there was going to be yet a lot of trials and heartache and sin that were still going to occur in David's life that he was going to allow. But God had made this promise. Finally, as I read a good piece of David's story, read over it, and I know we couldn't read much of it this morning, I saw a man that lived forgiveness. If you'd go back through and look at all these things that we already looked at, the obedient youth, he forgave his brothers and his dad in a way he couldn't help, he was the youngest, but there was forgiveness a part of his life there. Otherwise, he'd have turned bitter about his situation. When he was in the chase, when he was being chased by Saul, he was forgiving Saul time and again. He was living a life of forgiveness. And that's the only way that he could go back and treat him humanely. I mean, it was the only way he could go about his life was because he had forgiveness in his heart. And when it came back, when it came to serving Abner, who tried to take over the kingdom from him and to treat Mephibosheth the way he was supposed to, because he had forgiven Saul. He had forgiven Abner about what he had done. He forgave his son Absalom, and that's why when this treachery happened, he could still love him. It seems like he had forgiven these cases before they ever occurred. And not that he needed to forgive God, but he had a righteous motive. But God said, no, you're not going to do it. I don't want you to do it. It needs to be someone else. And so David, in a sense, forgave God, but he allowed God to have his plan, his way. And we know in David's life he did not always do that, and he reaped because he did not follow God's plan. So this man lived forgiveness. So many unfair and unfortunate situations, yet he moved forward. Most times he made these righteous choices. The Bible calls him a man after God's own heart in two different places. So why was he a man after God's own heart? Why are we where we are today? It's because God forgave us our debts. David forgave men. I think that could be one reason why he was a man after God's heart, because he lived a life of forgiveness. He had the influence of God's Spirit in his life, I believe, because, I don't know if you remember last Sunday, but because he had emptied and he had aligned himself. He had emptied his agenda. Had David followed his own agenda at any point through this story, the points we pulled out, it would not have been the same. But he had emptied his agenda and he had aligned himself with God. That was the only way that he could be a man after God's own heart. I hope at some point throughout this morning you felt a little motivation to live life in the lane of victory, looking forward, whatever your situation is, looking forward in life and living in victory and allowing God to work in your heart to bring about his purposes for his kingdom's sake. Let's kneel together for prayer.